When I was going for job interviews, like I got offered a CISO role at a pretty decent, like top 1,000 company, for like 160 grand with like, I think a $30,000 a year bonus. That sounds like a lot of money, but for all the responsibility that you have in that same role, 5, 6 years ago was like quarter or was like $500,000. So like that, the reality of the market right now is that they're so oversaturated, they don't need to pay.
You're listening to Protect It All, where Aaron Crow expands the conversation beyond just OT, delving into the interconnected worlds of IT and OT cybersecurity. Get ready for essential strategies and insights. Here's your host, Aaron Crow.
So, hey, everybody, thank you for joining me on another episode of the Protect It All podcast. I'm really excited about today's episode. Don't know Rob before kind of this whole interaction, which is one of the reasons why I do this podcast, is because I really get to meet some interesting people that are always something that I can learn. And obviously the goal is that the folks on my podcast, anybody listening out there, can learn from us as well. So Rob, thank you very much for taking time. Already excited that I've met you, and excited to see where this relationship goes. But why don't you introduce yourself, tell the audience who you are, what you are, and a little bit of info that you'd like to share.
Yeah, no. First off, I appreciate you letting me come hang out. For anyone listening, I've been in technology for about 25, 30 years. I mean, my whole life has been kind of a computer nerd, tech nerd, and gaming aficionado. I build replica movie props in my free time, and then I give back to the community a lot. That's what I'm really passionate about, is like doing podcasts like this, educating people, mentoring, and just overall kind of being a good steward to this community, because I feel like we need a lot more people who are giving back and a lot less people trying to sell you cert programs or boot camps. But yeah, that's a little bit about me, man.
Well, it's funny, before we started officially recording, like we were just talking about that, how we have these side hustles and we have these other things. And sometimes when I'm reaching out to folks about the podcast, and I get the first Heisman, which I understand because the LinkedIn hustle is strong. A lot of times when people are connecting with you on LinkedIn, their first message is, hey, I've got this stuff I want you to buy, or I want to, let me do a demo. And so I understand when people are hesitant when I reach out. I get a lot of that sometimes. It's like, hey, I have no buying power, or I'm not, and my response is usually like, cool, I'm not selling you anything. This is like, here's my podcast, go look at it. If it's something that's interested to you, let me know. If not, that's okay as well. So like that LinkedIn thing. And why don't you share a little bit of your story around how you were dark and then how now you're all over the place from one extreme to the other on LinkedIn?
Yeah. So I was at a Fortune 100 for 20 years of my career. I unfortunately got laid off, like a lot of technical people now. And my recruiters were like, hey, I can't find you online. And I'm like, yeah, I'm a professional hacker and a social engineer. Why would I be online? And they're like, well, even when I search your name, I can't find that you exist. And I said, yeah, I control the top 10 results on Google. Everything you find that says Robert Wettstein is controlled by me. Even the people who look real are also not me, but they're controlled by me. I have a bot that I wrote that was updating and making just random posts, which became way easier when like AI started coming around, because I just had it randomly script stuff and just pull stuff off the internet and repost it to stay high in the algorithm count. Then they were like, well, that's great, but because of the fake resumes, because of all the fake stuff that's out there, and because of nation state actors, your resume looks really impressive, but everyone's going to think you're a liar and that it's fake. And I'm like, okay, so what do I need to do? And they said, well, you need to build a LinkedIn account first. And I was like, really? I can't tell you how many times I've used LinkedIn for OSINT and gained access to people's data and like to build social trust. Like, I love golfing too, you know, all the different things that people post on there. So I begrudgingly called my friend and I said, hey, I need you to build me a LinkedIn, and I need it to be terrible. Like, grab the worst photo that you have of me, really write a terrible synopsis, and then send me the username and password, because then my autism and ADHD will kick in and I'll have to fix it. And I kind of went a little too hard. Ended up building like a podcast brand, getting sponsors. Now I talk all over the world. I am not a social person. I've never been a social person, and I've had to teach myself social skills. I've come from a guy who couldn't stand in front of two people to somebody last month who stood on a stage at Zero Trust World that's like, 100 foot long with like a 30 foot picture of my own head. It's a wild kind of journey. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I didn't realize how critical it had become to have a visible presence online. So even if you look at my LinkedIn, I've only been on LinkedIn for 3 years, but like it's all designed to make it look like I've been there forever. If you look at my original videos, like you scroll all the way down, you'll see that the photos on my original videos are me with darker hair. So it looks like I've been there for many years. But I just did that to create the illusion that I wasn't a new account so people would be a little more comfortable and have a conversation with me. And it changed everything. I went from getting no callbacks to massive companies, Netflix, Amazon, Google, reaching out to me and offering me opportunities. So it both was really cool and it also really pissed me off because this field attracts non-neurotypical people. And if you're expecting them to be social and you're expecting them to kind of also have technical, that is a very rare combo. People like us who are really technical and can also get on a stage and talk about things are very few. That's why it's so hard to fill, you know, the dockets at conferences. And that's why you see the same people all the time, because there's not that many of us. But it's so critical now, more than ever, because if you're looking for an opportunity and you're currently unemployed and you're not actively engaging on your LinkedIn and your social media, you're just going to be passed up because that first impression has now become your LinkedIn, which is wild.
What I love about that story, and I really want to dive into it. We have no agenda with this show, as you know, like anybody that's listened to this, I never know where I'm going to go with it. I really kind of go with the flow of what, you know, is kind of speaking to me in the moment. I think this is really important for folks to hear. And I'm sure you get this a lot. People asking, how do I get into cyber? How do I get into this? How do I get into that? And half of my career, more than half of my career, I spent super technical, you know, hands on keyboard. Like that's all I did. Like in the basement, you know, I did not have the best bedside manner. If you would use that, like I would strong arm people because I was smarter than you. And I knew like, you know, I was the Saturday Night Live, like just move, just get out of the way. I'll do it for you. Right. But there was a part in my career where I was part of the company I was with. They built this, they had this third party company come in, a consultant, and they created this thing they called Leadership Circle. And they brought us in and they took like, I think it started the first version was 100 people out of this, out of our company. And they put us all, and we're all like engineers, technical people, like all that kind of stuff. And they really said, hey, we want you to have these other skills because what got you here won't get you there. So we want to teach you these other softer skills to be able to, you know, kind of progress up the ladder. And man, I hated it. Like we were doing book reports and public speaking and, you know, case studies and all this kind of stuff. And I despised it, but I was good at it. Like I didn't like it and it was uncomfortable, but I was good at it. So they took the, you know, the top 10% or whatever out of the first year and they promoted us to the second year. And then they went harder to the paint. And then I ended up doing 3 years of this. And in the beginning, I despised it. But looking back, it was one of the most pivotal things in my career trajectory that made me be, you know, EY, you know, I went to EY as a consultant, was a senior manager, was on partner path and became a, you know, chief technology officer at a software company. Like I never would have done those things, not because I wasn't smart enough, but because I wasn't able to have those conversations. And those softer skills are the superpower. I can talk the technical, but I can also talk the other side. And that's the thing that most people don't think about.
It is. So anyone listening, it has become your most pivotal, most critical skill. I will hire someone. I work currently as an executive for a Fortune 500 company. I've hired multiple people over the last few years. I will hire someone who has less technical skills, but a better personality and can express what they like to do and shows more passion than I will anything else. Because I can teach you technical. I can't teach you not to be a jerk, right? A lot of us, for me, I you know, it turns out I had a very valid reason. I have what's called ADHD, which is autism and ADHD. So I get really engaged in the conversation. I'm interrupting you. I'm talking over you. I'm coming off very aggressive. And I didn't realize that. In my 20s, I had a leader and I still love her for this. She pulls me aside. She's like, everyone hates you. And I was like, okay, I need a little bit more context. She's like, well, let me explain it. Every time someone's struggling, you jump in and you help them immediately. And every time someone's wrong, you correct them to make sure they're right. And I was like, oh no, I'm such an ass. Like, I was like, what is, like, I'm really helpful and don't want people to be wrong. And she asked me a very pivotal question and it still sits with me. She said, Rob, what is your greatest teacher? And I said, failure. And she goes, what are you taking away from people when you just instantly help them? The ability to fail. Cool. Why do you think you're so smart that just because you failed, they're going to fail? That's arrogance and hubris. Mm-hmm. That has nothing to do with them. That has everything to do with you. You believe if you were not successful, then they can't be. And that may be right. And that may be accurate, but it also may not be. So everyone hates you because you outwork everyone. You don't stop working. You absolutely kill yourself for the job because you don't operate like normal people do. And I was like, so let me understand what you're asking me to do. You want me to kowtow my brilliance. You want me to stop being a worker and stop putting in so much time. And you want me to let people be stupid and wrong. She said, yes. And I was like, okay, why? She goes, you will get further in your career supporting people and allowing them to fail than you ever will bowling them over, trying to push your agenda. She goes, if you're wondering why your mobile policy or your IoT policies have not been accepted yet, because they're your policies. And I was like, hang on. So what if I give just a partial idea? I'm actively pretend to be dumber than I am. She goes, then people will be more comfortable around you and they will feel like they're part of the solution and they won't be bowled over by you just setting the standard and building it. And that was a moment for me where I had realized I had really effed up. I had actively alienated people. I had insulted people without realizing, and I was completely unaware of it. Like, fast forward to my diagnosis of autism in my 40s, I literally don't understand social skills. Then I spent the last decade studying micro expressions, studying body language, understanding body language, and learning when I was upsetting someone. And then it turned into, I also used that in my social engineering career where I could tell if I was pushing someone too hard or I could tell if I was about to break them to a point where they had access to a building or if I could. You learn those skills and they became invaluable in my career choices, but it was something that I didn't realize how much of a jerk I was. And all this time I thought people were just idiots, but the reality was I was the idiot because I was shutting down people who were just as smart as me or who had different opinions even before they talked. Because if you put out a complete, as a leader, and this is for any leader listening, if you come to the table with a completely thought out plan that's perfectly executed, every failure opportunity, all the different things laid out, everyone will agree with you, even if it's a stupid idea. But if you're an executive and you come to the table with a partial idea, hey, I'm trying to do X, then you can work on it together. And then it's a plan that everyone is invested in. It's not just like you kind of dictating. It's you really being a servant leader and going above and beyond for people to help them understand and to educate them and to let them lead and let them learn and let them fail. One of the biggest things on my team is I create an environment where failure is not only accepted, it's expected because we're trying to break boundaries. We're trying to do new innovative things. We fail with style. It came back from my old Fortune 100 days. Like our goal is to fail with style, just like Buzz Lightyear fall with style. We fail.
It's funny because as I've, like you, I've built out teams and large teams and small teams and work with people that I have. I remember way back in the day, even before my OT days, I was AT&T and I was global domain admin and we were doing, this is how old this was. We were doing Exchange 5.5 to 2000 migrations. And I joined the team and right after I joined, two data centers, one in Texas, one in Washington, close to Microsoft headquarters. And right after I joined, like three people quit. One person got laid off or fired. I don't remember the details, but I ended up being the only man standing right in this. And we had, I don't know, 300 Exchange servers in the data center that I was the only person in. And this was back before you had, remote work as much. Even if you did have remote work, there was physical servers that you had to swap out and there was work to be done in the data center. Like I was racking and stacking and doing, the whole thing, right? We went through a hiring process and I was fairly young in my early 20s, maybe. And, so my manager was the one doing the hiring and she hired a person for Microsoft. And this person on paper, man, they'd worked for Microsoft in Exchange. They were one of the designers of Exchange. Like they were just amazing. And when they came in, what they didn't realize and what the questions she didn't ask, because they look great on paper. And this person, she was a super nice person. I really liked her a lot, but she was that. She thought she was smarter than everyone else. But the other piece that nobody thought to think about is that at Microsoft, especially in a development SDLC type process, she was the best in the world at this very one particular subcomponent in Exchange. She had never done onboarding. She'd never supported Exchange. She supported this one little sub function in Exchange, and she was the best in the world at it, bar none. But I didn't need that. I needed somebody that could rack a server and, you know, migrate and, user and accounts
and actually have a conversation with an engineer without making them feel like an ass, right? Like,
exactly.
That skill set is something that technical people have to learn. It is not something you're inherently born with. It's just not. You have to put effort into it. And anyone who's kind of looking for opportunities now, I said, if you're not getting up, presenting, and putting yourself in uncomfortable situations and really growing as a human, you're going to really struggle during the interview process. Because you got to realize 80% of managers don't get what you got. Or even more, like full leadership training. I barely had that. I was one of the first people at Disney who got to do their leadership training. Because most leaders are really technical people who are then told at some point they should lead people and have really no concept or understanding of what leadership looks like. So they become authoritarian leaders because that's the only style they know. Do it my way and shut up. And they don't understand the value and benefits of service leadership and servant leadership. It's one of those things that I feel like you have to kind of learn. But the reason I'm telling you this is because the people interviewing you have very limited social skills. They're very highly technical and individuals, and they're going to literally go off vibe. How do I feel with this dude? Can I go and have a beer with this lady? And is she going to be chill? Or is this person or they going to be somebody I can kind of hang with? And if we've done a 10-hour day, am I going to want to strangle them? It has nothing to do with your technical. It has everything to do with, do they want to hang out with you? And it's become even more of a popularity contest because there's so many people who apply for roles. My senior level role got 800 applications in like the first 3 days. My junior role got 900 applications in the first 24 hours. It was like 700 and something in the first 24 hours. And I hired an entry-level person at a Fortune 500 with zero experience. And we interviewed 15 people and 10 of them didn't even do research on the job. One of them tried to use ChatGPT. Like, be genuine, be honest, and just be yourself, because we're going to see right through it.
Its problem is 100x worse than it was. You know, I was laid off a while ago, and it's amazing because of the presence that I have on LinkedIn. And am I the smartest person in the world? No, and I never claimed to be, right? But people know who I am, and because I have this podcast, and you've talked to me off camera and on camera, I'm the same person. Like, I'm not pretending. This isn't.
Yeah, we're more genuine with our approach, and I think there's a lot of people in our field who practice what I call security theater. They're very good at pretending like they know what they're doing and telling you that you're wrong. But when it comes to an original thought or idea, it just doesn't exist in their head. And they're so adamant on protecting themselves, they're not willing to lift others up. And that's where I think you and I differ, is like, yeah, we've got a lot of knowledge. That's great. But we also know that being relevant as we age out of cyber, and there is an age out, 40 plus, your job, to find a job is going to be exponentially harder. Guy that I hired, the hacker that I hired recently for my pen test team, he had interviewed for a bunch of places. They absolutely loved him. And the second he got on camera and they realized he was like a 40, 50 year old dude with gray hair, the entire tone changed. And it is a problem in our field with ageism. And in senior leadership, it's a little bit okay, but you've got to understand leadership roles go to internal people. They don't go to external people.
Yep.
Because if you hire someone outside, they better be the best of the best. Because if you don't, and they look at that person's pedigree and they go, I'm smarter and better than that guy, you've now lost one or two people who applied for that role internally. So it's this weird, you know, environment that we're in now where people believe that just being smart is going to be enough. And it was 10 years ago. It is not anymore. It is so much about your social skills and being able to talk. I can't tell you how many engineers are brilliant, but if I ask them to explain to me a firewall, like as if they're a child, they go, well, you know, a packet travels through. And I'm like, I don't know what a packet is. And they're like, well, you know, you build out the DMZ. I don't know what a DMZ is. And like, they keep going real, because they don't know how to talk to people. They only know how to talk to text. And that's a great skill if you lead an engineering team. But even if you're leading an engineering team, you have to know how to position your story. You have to be able to talk to people to not talk down to them, because that's the only way you get stuff done in business. It's not even about politics at that point. It's just about human decency and kindness. You don't want somebody to feel inferior to you. You want them to feel like a partner. And there's so many people, you and I are both perfect examples in technology, who for the longest time believed they were the smartest, because they probably were. But
right.
They also realized very quickly that being the smartest is not always the good thing. And having somebody in the room to challenge you, having someone in the room who has normal ideas. I'll tell you a quick story on that. For my 40th birthday, we decided to go to an escape room. All of my friends are non-neurotypical, just complete lunacy, like evil geniuses. And we grab my one friend who's a smart guy, but he's like kind of not, he has all our social skills and he's more of the normal dude. So we get into the escape room. My one guy who used to be a code breaker looks the wall and he goes, that lock over there, try 17, 15, 22. And like, boom, he unlocks it. Awesome. Then we do this. And then like, we're sitting there for like an hour or so and they come in, they go, we couldn't beat it. And we're like beating our heads against the wall. And the guy comes in and he goes, how the hell did you solve these things? And we go, solve what? And he's like, this puzzle requires you to solve three other puzzles to get the codes before you can open this. And if you don't solve those, you don't get the pieces for everything else. And I go, what, your puzzle's broken then? He's like, no one can just look at a code on a wall and figure it out. And I was like, well, this freaking dude over here can. Like, he's like, well, you guys broke the game, so there was no way for you to win. And I was like, well, that's your problem, not ours. But that's the perfect situation where having somebody who kind of takes you through the steps, as opposed to just kind of that smartest guy in the room going, hey, try this. It's really important to kind of have that pause moment. And that was one of the funniest things. Like when we broke an escape room, one of the harder escape rooms in my area. And they were like, yeah, no one's ever solved the fourth puzzle without solving the other three. And so we still considered ourselves winners. But it was one of those things where we assumed we were smarter than the puzzle, and we were, but then we ended up getting completely stuck and not being able to move.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm very fortunate in the career path that I took. And early on in my career, obviously, like you said, like it was all about being the smartest person in whatever discipline it was. And somewhere along the way, again, with that leadership circle that I hated in the beginning, and then becoming a consultant at Ernst & Young and Big Four Consulting, you know, there's so many soft skills that you're forced to do.
Absolutely critical for that job.
It is, right? And it really came down to, like, when I got, I say this a lot, but when I look back at my career, there's not a job I've had that I can remember that I applied for blindly, right? Every job I've ever had in my entire career is because I knew somebody and they said, hey, you'd be a good fit for this role. Or, hey, I want to hire you. We don't have a role. Let me build one for you.
I always
but never was people. It just apply online, right?
I always joke with people. I said, I've never applied for a role I actually qualified for.
Right.
The mobile IoT role at a Fortune 100 was a great example. Like, I got the job specifically because of how I answered one question. So I went through 8 hours of interviews at Disney because it's absolutely insane. And the one question that got me the job was, which role do you want? You applied for the mobile you applied for the mobile IoT role, and you applied for the PC desktop role. And I said, I could do PC desktop in my sleep, but I'll be bored in two years maximum. I said, but I didn't even know what IoT meant when I applied. And I've spent the last 3-4 weeks researching, and I'm absolutely obsessed. And she goes, tell me a story. So like, I told her one of the recent stories I read, the Coke machine that was hacked and at a school, and how they used the IoT, you know, the default username and password to gain access. And I was like, I just became obsessed with the technology. That one answer in that 10 seconds of literally 8 interviews over 9+ hours of interviewing, that 10 seconds of that interview is what got me the job, because she wanted somebody with passion, somebody who was really excited about IoT, because it was the first role that they had ever hired for IoT security. I got to work on Magic Band and do all the cool technology stuff and work in Star Wars Land and build and secure all that stuff. It was an unbelievable kind of opportunity. But it required a very specific, obsessive mind. Mm-hmm. And majority of people in technology are in it for the paycheck. They're not in it because of the obsession. And I talk to kids so often where I go, why do you want to go into technology? Well, I was told I could get six figures. I said, that's not going to happen for years.
Yeah.
Entry level, you're looking at like 35, 55,000. You can make more as a barista. Do you like having really terrible hours? Does your wife or your spouse understand? Like, are you going to get it on a podcast at, 7:30 in the morning and continue to build your brand and your career? Are you going to dedicate all of that time to educating and teaching people? Well, no, I just want to make six figures and work 40 hours. Cool. This isn't a career for you. Like, it's just, this is a rough job. And the reason it paid so much for so long is because nobody wanted to do it. And now that everyone wants to do it, it doesn't pay that much anymore, unless you're very talented or very skilled and you've been doing it for a while. And even then, when I was going for job interviews, like I got offered a CISO role at a pretty decent, like top 1000 company, for like 160 grand with like, I think a $30,000 a year bonus. That sounds like a lot of money, but for all the responsibility that you have in that same role, 5-6 years ago was like $250,000. So like that, the reality of the market right now is that they're so oversaturated, they don't need to pay.
Yeah, they don't. You're right. And the thing that most people don't think about is that passion, right? And if you're just looking for a paycheck, like go be a plumber, go be an electrician, because you'll make way more money with that.
Plumber, welder, electrician, that's where the cash is going to be long term.
100%. And talk about, building a 8 to 40 hour work week. You build your own company, you have other people working for you. I've got three kids and they're 12, 14 and 17. My oldest wants to go to the military. My other two don't obviously yet know what they want to do. But I tell them all, like, college is broken. The more AI comes out, the more that college is just not going to happen.
and it's rigged, right? Like, so I'm a poor kid.
Yep.
I couldn't afford college. My option was eating or college. I'm not going to go into debt for like 100 grand to show you that I have the skills. Like, I was already in technology. I was already in IT. I had already built my own company by the time I was 20. And what was I going to do? Like, go to college for 4 years, spend $100,000 to come out and make the exact same amount of money that I'm making now? It just seemed completely illogical. And I will tell you, it has limited my growth and my ability to grow because certain leaders really are specific about a degree. And those leaders are normally those who graduated from like fancy colleges and things of that nature and believe a degree truly matters. But that mindset of kind of what I'll call it schoolism, because I've never thought of any other word, is they're no longer going to be in charge. The new brood is people like Aaron and I who are moving into senior leadership and executive leadership who are going to have a say. I have not opened a single role my entire career that required education.
Yep.
Because I am not going to put barriers between myself and somebody who can't afford it, because that is garbage. Yep. As a dude who was living on the street when I was 18 years old, I'm not going to be the one who's like, oh, well, sorry, you couldn't afford an education. You're never going to get an opportunity in a higher paying job. That's garbage to me. So, but there are a lot of leaders who are like, Disney is a great example. Disney has implemented a new policy that basically says, if you don't have a bachelor's, you can't apply for a senior role unless you have a bachelor's or 15 years of experience. So the role that I previously held as the head of security DevOps, I can no longer apply for because I'm not, I'm not there. But it's just another gate that they're doing to try to make it harder for people to get opportunities and harder to get jobs. And it also allows them to filter out resumes easier and things of that nature. It's just, it's a filter technique for, I think, lazy companies, because education is not a requirement for this field. Curiosity is.
Well, and the other piece to that is we also know there's a back door to that. Like, same thing, like a big four consulting. I don't have a degree. Every step along the way, HR would say, oh, well, we can't put you for that because you don't have this checkbox. And then it was like, well, we can hire you at this level, but you'll never make it to the next level. But then when I got in the role, so they wanted to hire me to lower one, I denied them. They ended up hiring me at a higher role later on, like a year later. And then I got in there and within a year, I was promoted to senior manager. Which I was told you would never be able to do because you don't have a degree.
I was told it would never happen. I was sat down with my leader and given a very stern talking to about how I need to prioritize education and how I need to do that. Look at me now. I'm a Fortune 500 executive, something that literally less than 10% of the world get to do. And this punk kid who was homeless with a high school education is there. And it's not by chance It's not by luck. It's because I was prepared. And when preparedness meets opportunity, I was able to crush it. Right. And that's 100%. Really all it is. Like,
yeah.
I was just ready for it. And you got to be ready. I had turned down the manager role for the role that I'm in now. I had interviewed before and I went for their manager role and I didn't fully engage with the director. I wasn't really vibing with him. I figured it was going to be a pretty hard job for me to deal with. And I was about to accept it. So I'd been laid off for about a month or two and I was super depressed. I was crying all the time and just really bummed out. And I was financially fine, but mentally I had tied so much of my self-worth to my career that I was lost. And I was going to accept the manager role. And my wife goes, honey, you put us in a situation where we don't need you to accept it. Why are you settling? And I was like, we don't have insurance. We have two kids. You don't work. My severance will run out in 2 to 3 months. And then we're going to be borrowing from retirement. She's like, yeah, but that can last us years. And I was like, fair, but you're insane. She's like, but you've worked so hard. Why are you settling? So I turned down the opportunity. Then I turned down 4 other opportunities in this very weird market because they didn't feel right. And then I started to really second guess my turning down these opportunities because I'm 4 or 5 months out of work. I'm really starting to panic. My severance is about to run out. I get a message from somebody who is now following my content on social media who says, hey, did you apply for this director role? And it was the director I didn't really want to work for. He was now gone. So I messaged the senior director because I still had his email. And I was like, hey, man, does this role report directly to you? He responds back with one word, yes. And I was like, okay, this guy's clearly pissed. Like, he's like, who is this guy? I think he is. And I said, well, that changes everything. I'd love an opportunity to interview. I feel like the director role fits my skill set better, and I'd love a chance to do it. And I ended up getting the job.
Yeah.
But it's because I took a chance on myself and because I wasn't willing to settle that opportunity even happened, because I would still be in that manager role, or I would still be in that role that I didn't really want, or I would have taken. So the 4 other jobs that I had turned down because I just didn't have a good feel for them, every one of those roles, because when you start to get in this community of laid off people, you get what I call battle buddies, the military term, that will ride or die with you. So when you're crying and when you're super sad and you don't want your family to see it and you go cry in your garage, you can call your buddy up and you can be like, man, I'm freaking, everything sucks. I'm still unemployed. And it's okay, bro. It's okay. Like, don't worry about it. And those battle buddies ended up getting that job that I had turned down, and they ended up getting laid off 3 to 6 months later. Every one of those roles got eliminated. That's the environment of cyber right now. There is absolutely no job security. There is absolutely no stability. And if you don't have side hustles, the second you get laid off, you're going to be struggling because the world is not going to be kind to you. And if you don't have a social presence like Aaron and I have, where we put in hundreds of hours, like Aaron's done over 100 episodes of this podcast, hundreds of hours giving back to the community, you simply will not get opportunity. And that is the reality. And it's garbage and it sucks, but that is how it is because there is so much talent and there are so few jobs.
Yeah. Well, and as we see with AI, AI is great. There's all these amazing things about AI, right? But you hit the nail on the head earlier, rewind back to when you post jobs, and I've talked with recruiters and folks in my company and outside, you just get inundated because there's so many AI tools that will auto apply. So you post a job and you get thousands of responses. There's no way and you could go through that many people.
No, resumes are absolutely perfect. I interviewed 10 people, 7 of them literally had none of the skills listed on their resume. And I will say that I was not very professional, Aaron. May have been a little bit of a raging asshole because to me, applying for a role where you don't have skills, I'm totally cool with that. Go for it. Lying on your resume to position yourself better to get the opportunity, I will eviscerate you. I will destroy you to a point where you will never do that again because you're a horrible human being. I get that you're struggling. I get that you're about to lose your house. I've had people break down and cry in interviews more than once when I busted them using ChatGPT. I understand the struggle, but don't compromise your integrity.
Just
don't, because it's not going to go well. You're not going to last long in that role. And it's going to be a struggle. And yes, you've been able to pivot and move quickly, but you've also in a state of you're broken right now. And you have to accept that you're broken. I always say being unemployed right now in this market is like going into the ER bleeding out. And the doctor's like, hey, man, I don't really have time to triage you. Like, if you could just tell me what's wrong, that would be awesome. And we'll get to the of this. We'll figure it out, but like we'll get to you. The average time to hire someone, like let's say you interview today, you're looking at 3 to 6 months before they actually close on the interview. And the reason is because like Aaron said, you get inundated with fake resumes. In addition to that, a lot of these leaders who don't know how to lead are chasing unicorns. They want that perfect person they don't need to invest any time in where they can just do that. I can't tell you how many recruiters I talk to. I'll recommend certain people. My recommendations come very hard because I only recommend the best of the best because I want you to represent my name well. And they'll go through the interview process and I'll message the recruiter. I'm like, hey, can you give me any feedback? Why didn't they get the job? And they'd be like, well, the team loved him. They thought he was awesome. Then they told me, we're going to see what else is out there. And they sit and they make you wait months upon months. My hiring process, 2 interviews. One of those is with the recruiter and then 2 interviews with me and my team. And then we make the decision. On the call, I will tell you whether or not you're moving forward. And I will tell you where you messed up and why you're not moving forward if you're not. And nobody else really does that in leadership because they're so afraid of lawsuits. But I believe we have to be more kind to people who are going through these struggles because it's wrong. Like these are men and women and whatever you identify as who are literally just trying to give you 30 minutes of the best of themselves. And then they spent the last hour before the interview crying because they're about to lose their home. They're about to lose their car. And you as a manager who've been employed for the last 5 to 10 years don't understand anything about the market that they're coming in. And you're acting like it's just any other job interview when this is literally their lifeline. And if you can't be kind and take a few moments to educate them on how they could do better and can't do that, then you have no business being in leadership because we have to do better. And it just kills me when my mentees will go through an interview and then basically I have to use back channels to figure out exactly what they did because no one will give them direct feedback.
Half the time you don't even get a response at all. You just get ghosted. You're or if you do, it's very generic.
Yeah. So legal and HR will tell you basically don't give feedback. And the reason is because it opens you up to lawsuits and things of that nature. But for me, if you're a good human and you're not being like, well, that woman or that guy's too old, then it doesn't matter. But the reality is there are a lot of people. And as we've discussed earlier, 80%+ of them don't know how to interview. So they'll say things like, we're a younger crowd here or other ageist comments. I had that multiple times when I was interviewing. And it's one of those things where you know what they mean and you get the insult, but it erodes your soul. It really makes you feel worthless. It makes you feel like maybe this isn't the field for you. I can't tell you how many 45, 50 plus year old men I've talked to who have just decided they can't be in technology anymore and either started their own company or just retired early and are just trying to make it work.
Yeah. And I think that's why we hit on this a few times and we talked about the darker side or the struggling side, but I think there's a real value for folks to, and you don't have to have a podcast and you don't have to be on the level that I am or you are, but your presence online and being out there and creating, like I talked to a recruiter yesterday on my podcast and they said, hey, I'd rather hire somebody. I want to see what you've created, even if it's in your lab. I want to see your GitHub library. What have you created? Even if it's not perfect, right? It's what are you doing to differentiate? How can you differentiate yourself between everybody else? And having the perfect resume is not it. It's better to be, have that presence, like create something, have a YouTube channel, like do something that you're comfortable or maybe even not comfortable with to make yourself stand out above the crowd.
Yeah. Embrace the uncomfortable, man. That's my life motto. If you're sitting there and you're not uncomfortable with what you're doing it wrong. And if you're currently unemployed and you're not actively reaching out to people, when I got laid off, I built an intro video and you can still see it on my LinkedIn. It's the very first video I ever posted. The intro video was sent to 1,900 people manually. Then it created a bunch of advocates for me, people who were looking out for me, people who kept sending me opportunities. I only applied for maybe 15 or 20 jobs before I realized the game was rigged. And then I only applied for places that I had ins, where people were like, hey, apply for this role. I'll make sure you get an interview. Because that's the reality. Just this week, this month alone, I've had 4 people text me, do you know somebody for X? Do you know somebody for X? That's how you find jobs now, is having relationships and mentors and people who are looking out for you. It's not about how smart you are. It's about how other people perceive you and how much they will represent you when you're not in the same room.
I would argue that it's always been that way, because like I said, I've never applied for a job. It's just probably exacerbated now that you're just flooded.
Because there's only one role, right?
Like, yeah, yeah.
And there's 700 buddies that you have. Like, between, like, how many friends do you have right now who are unemployed in technology? Just like kind of do a quick math off the top of your head.
Oh gosh, probably 20 to 30 easily.
Yep. Just off the top of my head. I have at least 40 or 50. And that's because I've built this massive network of mentoring and stuff. But that's the reality. Every security professional has 20 to 30 buddies who they're going to recommend before you.
Yeah, 100%. So how do you short circuit that? Like, so the folks that are listening, right?
Be genuine. Don't reach out to me just because you think I have contacts. Reach out to me because you want to shoot BS and learn who I am and become my friend. Like, I'm not asking. And we can tell when you're not being genuine. Like, just reach out to people and kind of shoot the S. Like, it's not about anything. Like, don't go in with an agenda. Don't tell them, hey, if you see an opportunity for a job, let your video do that. Like, I did a quick 2-minute video. It's like, hey, here's a little bit about me. I'm a big nerd. I build movie props. You know, if you're looking for an executive or a management leader, like, let me know. I'm happy to work with your team. I love building teams. And I gave like a little 2-minute pitch, and the recruiter died. The recruiters absolutely loved it, because I showcased my soft skills. I was able to show that I was personable, and I was able to kind of make the video feel very much personal to them, where most people are just sending a message, or like you said, a block of text that's just like, let me sell you on myself and here's my resume. Like, cool, man. Like, start with hello.
Yeah.
Be that serious.
Well, and now especially, and obviously AI has video as well, but text is so hard, because I don't know if you created that, if you just copy and pasted it, et cetera. Okay. But with video, like, this is not fake. Like, obviously, yes, you can fake things, but you can tell.
I had a dude wear a face in an interview, someone else's face. I busted him, but like, that's becoming more and more common too. I had a recruiter recently, a person who was a recruiter, their account got compromised, and then the attacker used the photos to create a deep fake and then got one of my mentees on a call to offer them a job opportunity, and they were wearing the recruiter's face of the account they compromised. Like, we're literally in a world that that's a reality. And like, when I have people join my call, I go, hey, I'm going to have you do a few things that are going to seem a little weird. I need you to put your hand in front of your face. I need you to turn fully to your left, and I need you to turn fully to your right, because ears have not been perfected with AI yet. And if they won't do that, that's a very good indicator that they're probably not real. Another thing Jerry Osher talked about on a Simply Cyber, we were having a discussion. We're talking about, like, how could you, as a leader, how can you stop people from using ChatGPT? Because you can just say what they said, or you can have ChatGPT record when the hiring manager is talking, and it'll give you the perfect answer. And he had a great idea, which is hold a piece of paper up with your question and say, do not say this out loud. I just need you to answer it. And I was like, oh, I'm using that next time I hire. We were just trying to hire a senior engineer for my buddy's team. And like 10 of the interviews people were using ChatGPT were like, bro, we've already put these into a chat engine. We know what the chat response is. We want a human response thing. But because people are so desperate, they're giving up their integrity, and they've never really been a security person to begin with. They've always just been faking it, because if they were, they wouldn't give up their integrity for anything. Doesn't matter. I would rather be homeless than compromise my integrity, just because
the irony is giving the wrong answer that is mine and thoughtfully thought through is actually stand out and better than the perfect answer that is obviously fake.
Yeah. And I know we talked a lot about interviewing. One of the biggest things is, if you don't know, just simply say you don't know. I don't expect you to know everything, but what I expect you to know, and what is the most important question to answer, is the question you don't. And if you answer it clear and concise, like, I have no idea. That is not 100%. In my wheelhouse. I remember when I was interviewing with the red team for that role that I got for the IoT role, they were just peppering me with questions. And I finally got to a point where I was like, guys, do I really need to know Kerberoasting for this like role? I don't even know what that is. And they just started laughing hysterically. They were like, oh, we were just curious when you were going to break. We just wanted to see how you answered a question you didn't know. I mean, that's the reality is like what you don't know also says a lot about your integrity and kind of who you are as a person. Like, just tell me you don't know something. It's all good. I don't mind educating and teaching you.
100%.
So and I've got extra all this time if you want to go over, but if you don't, like, that's totally fine. But this has been a fun chat. I appreciate you.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think this is a valuable conversation for folks because as we know, as we've talked about today, there's so many that are struggling. Maybe you've got a job, but you're not the job you want to be. You're trying to get in. You're trying to promote, like whatever those things are. All these things are so valuable for us to think about because you look online. And it's all like, I'm going to take this class. I'm going to go get another degree. I'm going to do all these steps. And none of those things are going to guarantee, nothing's going to guarantee, but it's probably not even going to really increase the probability of your next role.
Getting another cert, connect with another person. You're going to have Correct. A better opportunity and a better chance for success because a cert's
Go to the networking, go to the happy hour, like go to the conference and don't worry about the talks. Talk to the people in the hallways.
I can't tell you how many people I've invited out to cyber brunches, cyber dinners, cyber things who want to get into technology who don't show up.
Yep. Most of the time. So I go to conferences a lot. Like I'm speaking at them, I'm presenting at them or I'm volunteering or whatever the case may be. Most of the time, I never go to a talk. Black Hat, DEF CON, RSA, you name it. I rarely ever go to a talk. And it's not because I'm not interested. It's because I'm usually more, my entire schedule is usually engaging with people in the hallways, at happy hours, things like that. And there's so much value in that. And it's why I've built this network. It's why I've built this channel. It's why I've built all these things. And it's also why when I was laid off last time, within a week, I had five different interested parties that were either, hey, we've got this role that we want you to fit for, or I want to create a role for you, like day one. Right. I wasn't even having to, like, I just started messaging, hey, by the way, this happened. They're like, oh, I want to hire you. Like, talk about it. Right. And it's because of that muscle that I've forcefully done. And so go to the conferences, go to the happy hours, like depending on where you live, there's going to be a happy hour in your neighborhood. There's going to be conferences you can go to that are low or no cost.
Bring your local go volunteer at B-Sides.
Yep.
The biggest thing Aaron just said was volunteer. Stop expecting people to give you things and stop expecting handouts. No one is going to help you get into cyber. No one's going to help you find a job but yourself. For every person who says, hey, man, I got an opportunity for you, that opportunity is never going to pan out. Right? It's like 90% of them are just never going to be an opportunity. And that's the reality. And it's not because they don't want to help you. It's that because they literally can't. There's multiple companies that are going, hey, we could hire Aaron, or we could hire seven guys in India or Poland who could do the job too for the exact same cost.
Correct.
That is the reality of this market. AI is not taking jobs. Statistically, there is absolutely nothing that shows that. Oh, maybe about 100,000 or so jobs have been lost to AI. Many of those have been reacquired by a human because they realized that AI couldn't fill the role. Multiple companies have invested in AI and then pulled it back. Hell, there's a company just recently that I will never do business with, Oracle, and hopefully they're not a sponsor, and that sent out a message to 30,000 plus people and laid them off by an email. And they did it specifically under the guise of they looked at their business and they were trying to save money when they were 95% profits last year. They did it specifically so they could invest in AI without a risk. They said, I can invest in this company and I can throw money into AI and building out our data center, and we can just fire these 30,000 people. And we don't really have to take a financial risk to invest in AI. That is why they did it. And anyone who says different just hasn't done the research. The reality is that's what's happening is companies are not doing it because they need to. They're doing it because they don't want to take the risk on AI. So they just get rid of people to say, well, we'll try it out. That's not necessarily AI taking their job. That's them investing in a technology and not wanting to, they want to stack the deck in their favor for profit.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But that's the world of technology right now, where you could be at Oracle for 20 years and you're terminated via an email that says, upon further investigation, we've decided that today is your last day. Like, that is the most inhumane, just morally bankrupt thing I've seen a company do in a while. And the problem is it's becoming more and more standard.
100%. 100%. So thinking about that and all that we've talked about today, like what's the future look like in your opinion? Like what's the thing that keeps you up at night that scares you? What's concerning come up over the horizon? And maybe one thing that's exciting that's come up over the horizon.
I don't really have anything that's scaring me. As much as AI is frustrating, it's an amazing tool. It's an amazing tool for so many things. There is definitely some negatives to it, but just like any tool, it can be used for violence or it can be used for good, right? And AI in itself is beautiful. There was a guy recently who put his dog's DNA and things into an AI, and the AI helped him create a cure. Like, we are looking at the precipice of technology, but if you look at all of the data center projects over the last year, all of them have been either canceled or stalled because we can't support the infrastructure to build the data centers that support AI. And then AI is going to start to become cost prohibitive, because if you look at a company like OpenAI, everyone's like, oh my God, they're crushing it. They have literally lost billions of dollars month after month. Year after year. They are not crushing anything. They're just really loud, and their marketing is really good. Their product is great, but they are doing it at substantial loss. Massive, massive losses. Billions upon billions of dollars. And they're not seeing the return. And as companies start to invest in AI, they're going to realize the cost of running AI models and large language models can start to be relatively cost prohibitive very quickly. And as the rising infrastructure cost becomes higher and higher, like companies like AWS and things that have massive data centers, my biggest concern is not having enough infrastructure to support this, where the scary part becomes, how do you continue to grow and protect yourself when the infrastructure and the things that are needed to protect yourself can't support the environment and can't support the growth at how fast we're going. So my fear is that unless we start bringing manufacturing and things back to the United States and start doing these things, our dependency on third world countries, on out of the state countries, is astronomically high. And that to me is a big fear of mine, because it means that our job as cyber professionals is going to be to do more with less, to work harder, and to not hire in the US because we can't afford it, right? They're going to shift really heavily to hiring in India and Poland and some of those other areas. And this isn't just like hearsay. This is all my friends working for other big Fortune 500s. Like, that is the direction that they're telling us to go. And as leaders, you have to justify and really argue and fight to hire in the United States, because I can't just say, well, I want to keep the jobs in the US. I'm an international company. Like, that's the most arrogant thing I could say. So I can't make that argument. And when I can hire 5 developers for the same cost of 1 developer in the United States, that means the cost of people in the United States is going to go down astronomically. The cost of inflation is going to go up. So that's my biggest fear. That's the things that keep me up, is because I work with so many people struggling in cyber right now and in technology that I don't feel like there's going to be an end. And the only real roles that they're hiring for right now are IAM and AI. That's really it. Like, if you talk to any recruiters, they're like, do you have AI skills? No. All right. Like, sorry. Like,
see you later.
I've got a guy who's looking for an LLM. And then all the roles are going to go to people like Jason and I, or like Aaron and I, who built this huge network where they're like, I want that guy to come work for us. So you're not even going to get an opportunity to interview for the role. And that's not fair. I agree with you. It's not fair, but that is the reality. And then the 100%. One thing I'm excited for is also the thing that I'm scared about is AI. I really think AI is going to transform the way we do things. I think it's going to challenge and push boundaries. And I really feel like it's going to help us grow in ways we never thought. I'm looking at cures for things. I have a rare neurological disorder called Charcot-Marie-Tooth. Like, how cool would it be if, like, somehow AI sequences my DNA and is like, hey, you just take the shot and you're cured. Like, that would be amazing. Your muscles no longer deteriorate. You can walk without, you know, like, we're not far from that. And I feel like that is the most exciting thing for me, because that technology is like right there. But the very scary part of that is we also don't truly understand what it's doing. And anyone who says you saw that the chats that leaked from Claude, where they're like, oh, we we don't really know what it's going to be. That is real. That is the reality of this race to the front. We're doing stuff so quickly. We're doing it so recklessly, trying to become the world leaders. It's very similar to IoT and stuff back in the day, right? IoT has suffered for a very long time from the same thing that rushing to market suffered from, which is lack of security, lack of hardening, lack of any sort of password policies or controls. And they rush to market to be first to market. And then that's how you get like a doorbell that you can log into, or a lock that you can unlock with any phone. So that's it for me, man. We've got a lot to learn. And I feel like you've got to have a lot of patience, and you've got to have at least a year within savings to be in technology. If you're looking to pivot or looking to get into this career field and you don't have at least a year in savings of your bills, don't. This is just a too volatile of a place. Like, unless you're willing to invest hundreds of hours building a brand, constantly staying relevant, it's just not going to be worth it. Because like, if I get laid off tomorrow, I'm going to message Aaron and be like, hey, man, you know of anything? Because now we're buddies. Yep. Like, and he's going to do the exact same thing to me. And it's an unwritten law between cyber professionals that we look out for each other, because this job is hard.
Well, and just to wrap this up, right, you just hit on something that's really important. You know, there's an ulterior motive that I have to this thing. Yes, I'm volunteering. I volunteer at ICS Village, which is a nonprofit. I volunteer at Building Cybersecurity, which is a nonprofit, which I agree and love and the focus of them, but I also do it because it gets me in the door. It introduces me to people. It's the same reason I do this podcast. Like, yes, I enjoy giving back and I enjoy these conversations, but I also enjoy meeting people like you. Like, if I didn't have this podcast, you and I probably wouldn't have met, right? So now I have this connection because of this thing that helps me. It also helps the audience. It helps everybody, but I'm doing this for myself. And there's a reason I did this. I enjoy it. I'm good at it. I believe like all these types of things, but I'm doing it for myself.
And it helps our soft skills. Like, you and I are both presenters. Talking to different people and kind of engaging at their level and kind of switching your talking approach and how you engage is a skill. And it's something that I really had to learn. Like, if I get a slow talker on my podcast, it is taking a lot to be able to engage. And that's a skill. It's a very important one. But man, I appreciate it.
So what call to action? How do people get a hold of you, find you, all the things? What do you want people to know?
I'm so bad at Bowtie Security Guy, all one word. You can find that'll find me anywhere. I'm on LinkedIn, YouTube, everywhere basically. I'm even on TikTok. I'm like a 45-year-old man posting TikTok videos. That's my world now. As somebody who is vehemently against social media, I've now just embraced it wholeheartedly. I'm also on YouTube. I do a ton of content to help and mentor people. If you're looking for a mentor, I charge you nothing. Reach out. If you're looking for someone to help you with your resume, again, I charge nothing. If you are struggling, I am here for you. There are so many people who are going to take advantage of you. I just do not believe in getting blood from a stone. If you're somebody who's gainfully employed, who wants mentoring, I do charge for that. But if you are unemployed and you are struggling, hit me up. I am happy to help. I will put time into you. Don't be upset if I just send you a video, because I've answered a lot of these questions before. I've got different hiring videos. I just did a local ISC Squared talk that I'll end up posting on my page here soon, where I talked about the job market. There's multiple job search things within my YouTube. I also work with a charity called Ginger Hacker Initiative, and we pay for certs. So like, if you can't afford a cert, we will buy one for you. Just show us that you want to put the effort in. Show us that you actually want to learn, and we're happy to help you. GHI has already sponsored multiple certs. We do a charity fund drive every year, and we basically, all the vendors who make me get on calls to try to sell me swag, I then send that stuff to Ginger Hacker so we can sell it in our charity auction, and we can give back to the community. It's a great Discord community, and it's just awesome. But and then Bowtie Security Guy After Dark is my podcast. It is very much just a podcast for new people. And I talk to security professionals like you, but I really go back to the roots of their career. I'm going to end up having Aaron on, because now he's had me on. It's an unwritten law that he now gets to come hang out on my podcast. But I'm going to talk to professionals about why they got into technology. I talk to professionals. One of the questions I always ask is the cyber shortage real? Surprise, it's not. I really go above and beyond to just kind of educate on what it looks like for the job and what the real mental struggles are and how hard this career is and how it's become very different than what you've been told.
That's awesome, man. This is the thing, is people don't see all of the work that goes in behind the scenes to be relevant, right? And we have to continually focus on those things. And I nonstop, and I'm sure you do as well. I'm watching TV with my wife and I'm
eating for lunch. So ThreatLocker it is a sponsor of my podcast, and they're doing like a hiring event today, which won't matter, it'll air later. But one of my mentees is flying down just to interview. And I was like, hey, man, let's go get lunch. Because it's all about supporting people, because 100%. We need future generations of people, but leaders like us are dying.
Yeah.
There's just not a 100%. Lot of us who actually care and want to see other people successful. My success is your success. I don't look at anything else. I don't care about my title. My boss recently, we're going through a big reorg, and they're like, well, what do you want to do? And I said, give me your worst performing team, and I'll prove to you it's the leader and not the team. Because there's so much toxicity, and there's people who are listening to them, and you feel stuck. And you're trapped. There are no opportunities. There's no jobs. You have to put yourself out there. You have to get uncomfortable. You have to go to networking events. That's the reality of the world right now. And if you're not willing to adapt, you're just going to continue to struggle. And you've got to be, you know, Semper Gumby. I've worked with a lot of military guys. I'm not military. Please don't think that. But I've worked with a lot of military guys. So I've got a lot of military science. But you have to be highly flexible and highly ability to adapt has to be there. Because if you don't have that and you're just not malleable at all, you're just not going to find opportunities. And if you're like, I talk to people all the time, they're like, well, I need full remote. I need to make over $150,000. I need to work Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. And I was like, cool. None of those things are going to happen. So like, let's go ahead and let's reality check you a little bit. You're going to make $40,000 less. You're going to be on site 3 days a week minimum. And you might be able to find that higher salary at a startup, but you also might get fired in 2 months when they close the doors. So
correct.
Like, set your reality to real and kind of turn the dial from fantasy to real. And I think you'll be a lot more successful. And if you set your expectations to a real level, you'll be a lot less depressed when you continue to get told no. The last thing I'll leave people with is, every time you get no, I want you to think of it as if your next dream job is only 50 more no's away. Like, all you have to do is just suffer through 50 more of these gut-wrenching no's, and then you're going to land your dream job and you're going to rock that job until the end of your career. Like, focus on that mindset and really just focus on, you know, trying to create positivity and stay positive, because the mental game in this entire thing is the most important game right now. You've got to be ready, and you've got to be prepared. And when that opportunity comes, it means preparedness, and that's when you crush it.
Yep, absolutely, man. Dude, freaking gold today. I appreciate you. Definitely everybody reach out. If you need a mentor, Rob is there. Reach out to him. Check out his podcast. Check out all the things. You're not alone in this. Everybody's struggling. And there is opportunity out there. You just have to differentiate yourselves, right?
So critical. So critical. And that anyone I know who's really talented and really good isn't unemployed.
Correct.
And they don't stay unemployed for long. But you have to be able to adapt. You have to be able to make, you know, concessions. And if you're not willing to do that, it's going to be real hard. The other thing that people hate is the fact that most jobs won't let you negotiate salary anymore.
Right.
That's kind of a thing that's dead. of all the job offers I got, not a single one of them let me negotiate the salary. But they were just like, this is the offer. You have 24 hours. And I'm like, but I need more time. And they're like, that's nice. You have 24 hours.
Right.
Because we have 6 other people who will take the job for this.
Take it or leave it. Yep.
Yeah, man.
Awesome. I appreciate you, brother.
You too, man.
Thanks for joining us on Protect It All, where we explore the crossroads of IT and OT cybersecurity. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to stay ahead in this ever-evolving field. Until next time.